I'm listening to the show every morning, and you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Some talent in Cork, isn't there? Wow. A few of the GAA boys weren't happy, but it was my sporting hero. I was contesting, I think, against Jimmy Barry Murphy. So once you're in that company, everything is good.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special. Believe me, I think it becomes more special when you're on the coach, because it's something, unfortunately, inside me that's ultra competitive, and I need to be there.
Catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM on the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
All right, Colin Buig, a very good morning to you.
Owen, how are you?
Very well. Daniel Harris, you're with us as well. What's the crack? Colin, we'll put you in the firing line first of all. You've done this to yourself again, where you've decided to pick a team from recent memory. Today you're going for Manchester United's best ever 11 of the Premier League era. Walk us through it. What have you gone for here?
That's right. I've gone for an expansive 4-4-2 formation, which could be a hybrid of 4-3-3 if circumstances dictate. So I'll go through it here. In goal, Peter Schmeichel. Left back, Dennis Irwin. Centre backs are Rio Ferdinand and Yap Stam. Right back is Gary Neville. Left wing is Cristiano Ronaldo. Central midfield is Paul Scholes and captain Roy Keane. The right side of midfield is David Beckham. And up front is Eric Cantona and Ruud van Nistelrooy. So to say that I was ambivalent about leaving certain people out here is an understatement. Such are the riches on offer. That's my team.
What was the toughest call?
Oh, undoubtedly Wayne Rooney and Ryan Giggs. I mean, with one you're talking about United's greatest ever goal scorer, with one you're talking about the greatest ever appearance maker, and obviously they're both fantastic players. So those two were very difficult to leave out. But if you read my article on offtheball.com about this team, at the end I do have an alternative formation of a 4-2-3-1, which allows Giggs and Rooney into it and Beckham and Van Nistelrooy out of it. But this, the team that I've named out, this 4-4-2, is what I think is the strongest Manchester United 11 in the Premier League era. And I think this 11 would take on any other Premier League 11 era and beat them.
Can I ask, what are the criteria? Like, is it the player's impact on the club? Is it his best ever performance? Is it a whole season? Like, what? So how do you decide over one over the other? Because Ryan Giggs' greatest ever performance as an individual, best ever season as an individual, you know, or is it him as a central midfielder? What are your criteria?
I'm glad you asked, sir. I do have criteria again, very similar to the Irish Premier League 11 that I named. So every player has to play in their natural position. And the biggest thing for me is the Premier League contribution that each player made to the Manchester United cause. So it's not necessarily their longevity that gets them in. It's what they did with the time that they had. And that's why these 11 are in. So it's a team as well. It's not just 11 individuals. So this is a team that can beat any other team. Hence the right-hand side with Gary Neville and David Beckham and their fantastic partnership. So it's unfortunate. I do have to leave out huge names. The Manny Abidic is another name I have to leave out very reluctantly. But this is what I think is the best team and all the players playing in their most natural position who have been successful at Man United. And this is what I ended up with.
Daniel Harris, what was your initial reaction when you saw that team?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I would say, I think you might have failed your own criteria, though. Because if you're going for natural position, you've got to have Dennis Irwin at right back. As I have. Not for that reason.
I think he played more left back, didn't he?
He did, but he started at right back. He moved to left back because he could, rather than because that was his natural position. But that was a good team. I picked my team on slightly different criteria. I guess what I'm looking for when I picked it is I'm partly looking for every player's highest level. If every player plays to their height, to their top level, who am I going to pick? And I also, I guess, was picking the team thinking, if United were playing the best teams that I've ever seen, what do I think United would have to do to be able to beat anyone? And that was what I was motivated for when I picked my team. So I also left out some players that I would not ordinarily leave out of this kind of thing.
So run us through it, Daniel.
Okay, so my team was Schmeichel in goal, best to ever do it. Nothing else to say, really. Then Owen at right back, Stam Ferdinand in the middle and Patrice Evra on the left. Then I went for a midfield three of Ince, Keane and Scholes. And then up front, I went for Ronaldo on the right, Van Nistelrooy in the middle and Giggs on the left.
no Rooney.
No, I mean, the one that was the hardest to leave out was Eric Cantona, because, I mean, I grew up watching Eric Cantona. I was at Selhurst Park when he booted Matthew Simmons. Eric Cantona is everything, I think, a footballer and a human being should be. However, I guess what I'm thinking is, I thought I was that if United were playing the best team that I ever saw, which was Barcelona, I basically thought, well, if you get a chance, you need to score. And the person most likely to do that is Ruud van Nistelrooy. And you can't afford to play two strikers against Barcelona or against the majority of the best teams that you might play. So I went for Paul Ince, who, because of the way that, because he went to Liverpool and because of the way he celebrated scoring for Liverpool, and then because of all the gobshiting subsequently, is someone who I think that people forget how good he was. But between about 1991 and 1995, Paul Ince was the best midfielder in the Premier League. And so I felt that if you had a midfield three of him, Roy Keane and Paul Scholes, it would be extremely difficult for any team to beat you. If I was picking a team just to play in a bog-standard Premier League game, then I could very easily play David Beckham on the right, as you did, and then play Ronaldo on the left. But my favourite Ronaldo was 2006-07 Ronaldo, when he was still playing on the right, before he sort of turned into a relentless, remorseless accumulator. When he was playing on the right, he was still a lot of fun. He was still playing partly to win at football and partly to take the piss. So I put Ronaldo on the right for that reason. And I would say the other change I think we had was I had Evra in my team and you didn't. As far as I can see, Evra is the best fullback I've seen at United, and it's not close. Erwin was excellent, and it's a difficult decision between him and Gary Neville. But the thing about Erwin that always sticks in my mind, and I know that in a long career it shouldn't, is when he got burned up by Stoichkov when United got thrashed by Barcelona, and Stoichkov just stepped on the gas and Erwin couldn't go with him. And that is not something you would ever say about Patrice Evra of anyone. He was fast, he was strong, and actually he also got you goals. Once Rio Ferdinand stopped going forward for set pieces, and Evra started going in front of him, started scoring goals as well. And I would say that him and Ashley Cole were by far the two best fullbacks in the world for probably a three-year period. And I'm not sure you could say that about Neville or Evra. About Neville or Erwin. So yeah, Evra is by far the best fullback I've seen at United, so that's why I picked him.
Colin, was there any consideration to shoehorn Paul Ince ahead of Paul Scholes in your team?
Well, I was asked last night by a friend of mine, what would be your backup 11? And Ince was straight in there. Ince was fantastic. Danny was completely right. And I guess it's the way he left the club and the fact that he played for Liverpool that Manchester United fans might have a different opinion of Ince. But if you judge him as a player, he's fantastic. I mean, when Roy Keane did that Best of Enemies documentary with Patrick Vieira a few years ago, he put Ince in the team ahead of Scholes, Keane, in his United team. So he's obviously highly rated by the players that played with him. And he was fantastic. You just have to look back at clips. But no, I mean, I had to go with my midfield two. Actually, my midfield two was probably the most straightforward selection that I had, which for me was Keane and Scholes immediately. There was no problems there.
Can we talk a little bit about Scholes? Because our classic game club this week is the Juventus-Manchester United second leg Champions League semi-final from 98-99. And obviously everybody famously knows that Scholes and Keane both pick up bookings and miss the final. But maybe what everybody doesn't pay attention to too much is the fact that Scholes wasn't first choice that night for the away game. Daniel, it seems there was a long period of time where Alex Ferguson felt like Nicky Butt and Paul Scholes were interchangeable in some respects, particularly in a big away match where you would expect that Man United need to get on the ball a bit. He went for Nicky Butt against Deschamps and Zidane and Edgar Davids. Why was it such a close-run thing in Alex Ferguson's head for such a long period of time that these two players were fairly close to each other in standard?
I don't think it's so much that they were fairly close to each other in standard. I think it's that you're looking for a different thing from them. And it's also notable in the treble season that Scholes also didn't start the games against Arsenal. Fergie always started Butt, because I think he felt that he needed some extra ballast in midfield to enable him to play two strikers and to play Beckham and Giggs, who were basically mainly on the touchline. So I think it was not a question of quality, but a question of balance. And Scholes hadn't quite established himself as someone you would always pick. Later era Scholes became that, because when he moved back, he started controlling the game. So at that point, Scholes was an essential. But when the early days of Scholes, he was mainly about scoring. He actually talked about this himself quite recently, that he felt that his job was to score goals. And if you're playing with two strikers and two wingers, then when you're playing the better teams, if you've got a midfield player who's mainly trying to score goals, that's a problem. I mean, we saw it with Chelsea, we saw it with Liverpool, in that Lampard always played on the left of a three. And that was essential because it meant that he could, having three there, because it meant that he could concentrate on scoring, and he didn't do that much else. And similarly with Gerrard, managers throughout his career struggled with knowing where to put him. And he had his best season when Benitez played him behind Torres, because then he didn't have to do anything else. So I think that's why Scholes was left out. It wasn't an issue of him not being a better player than Butt. It was just sometimes a different option was necessary.
Could he not have done what Nicky Butt did, though, and also, like, I mean, I guess maybe this is a conversation about Ferguson as a tactician. Like, it's almost like you couldn't fit Gerrard and Lampard in the same team. It's like you couldn't fit Keane and Scholes in the same team on the biggest of the big games, when actually you could. They could both have played quite deep, and it would have been a different type of a more tiki-taka style team, I suspect. But why did that not work out for them?
It did work in that he played Scholes in most of the big European home games, and had Scholes not been suspended for the final, I'm absolutely certain he would have played Scholes, not Butt. But I guess with football, you add something in one place, you've got to take it away in another. That's like the game is perfectly balanced, and sometimes different players. If you look at the two finals that Fergie won, the two European finals that Fergie won, I'm pretty sure that the starting 11s in both those games didn't start any other game together. And if you look at what's considered to be the classic United 11 from the treble season, the one that everyone would name that has Scholes in it, I think that team only started one game together. So football, it's not science, and it doesn't always work in the way that you expect it to work. And sometimes you have to take note of the fact that your opposition are good. And if you want to play two strikers, then you can't have a midfield player, and you can't leave the entirety of the midfield running to Roy Keane, is I guess what I'm saying. Although he did do a pretty good job of doing that, and also did a pretty good job of that for Ireland as well.
If you talk about the treble winning team and you talk about two strikers, I'm not sure that either of you guys get tempted by York and Cole at all. Especially Colin, I think you're making the point about having a bit of chemistry in your team and players that know each other and that can clearly, not just putting names together out of a hat and putting your 11 best players on the pitch, an actual team in these fantasy stakes we've got this morning. Like, why not Cole and York? Did they come into your consideration at all?
They did. You could pick the front six from the treble winning season and just leave it at that and walk away. I mean, Daniel has gotten more ambitious than me because he's trying to take on Europe with his team. But mine is just a bog standard Premier League team that will beat all other Premier League sides in history. And if you wanted to, you could definitely put Colin York up there. But no, I had to look at the overall picture of the 28 years of Premier League, and I was thinking, it's Cantona and Van Nistelrooy for me. Obviously, Rooney was very close into it, but like, Ferguson brought some fantastic strikers to the club. I mean, for a manager who was seen to have a weak spot in goal as a goalkeeper, Bayer, and to recruit central midfield after Roy Keane left. I mean, the list of strikers that he brought in, Alex Ferguson, to the club, like Brian McClair, bring back Mark Hughes, Colin York, as you say, Solskjaer, Sheringham, Tevez, Berbatov, Van Persie, and Rooney. But I had to go with a guy in Cantona who, when he joined Man United in November 1992, United were 10th after 15 games. They were going nowhere. They hadn't won the league since 1967. And at the end of that season, they win the league for the first time since then. And the following year, they win the double, and Cantona gets PFA Players Player of the Year. Then, of course, he gets suspended after the Kung Fu kick. United lose the league by a goal to Blackburn, lose the FA Cup final to Everton, and then Cantona returns, and we know what happens there with the double. So what Cantona did in his time at United puts him into the team straight away, ahead of Colin York, who had an absolutely wonderful partnership, brilliant, and are obviously central to what happened in the treble. But they don't like the, they don't touch Cantona or Van Nistelrooy in terms of talent and ability. And for Van Nistelrooy, again, another player who fell out with Ferguson spectacularly, the League Cup final in 2006 against Wigan, threw a huge drop after not being brought on at all from the bench. And it was inevitable that he was going to leave that summer. But you forget about Van Nistelrooy. His first 3 years at the club, he was sensational. And he was at a club at a, transitional period, like for 5 years between 2001, 2006, United only won the league once. So Van Nistelrooy was playing with often a very mediocre side around players who were either developing or frankly inadequate. And he was scoring 20 plus goals in every season, I think, except 2004-05 when he was injured a lot. So I can't move those people out. I can't take Cantona and Van Nistelrooy for anybody else for those reasons alone. But Colin York, yeah, absolutely. They could be in another different sort of United 11, but not this one.
Van Nistelrooy, I would say, is his form in the second half of 2002-03 is probably the best I've ever seen from a United player. And in Champions League, even though he never played in a team that was good enough to get to a final, he got 38 goals in 47 games. And he also did it in Europe for PSV and for Madrid. And I think that of all the great players that we've seen in the Premier League era, he is one of the ones who people know was great, but history has not judged him to be as great as he was because he was playing with players like Cleverson and Jemba Jemba. He basically turned up during Fergie's sabbatical, should we call it? Not even sabbatical, testimonial. It's probably a better way. looking at some of the players that arrived at that point and wondering quite why that might have been. Forlan, Bellion also. I mean, obviously Forlan was better than Bellion and Jemba Jemba, but still, there was some things that went on with the transfer that suggested that perhaps, Michael Crick's documentary, The Boss, on this topic is excellent. But the thing about Van Nistelrooy was that he was not a guarantee of a goal, but at his best, he was almost a guarantee of a goal. In the 2002-03 run-in, he scored 15 goals in the last 10 games and won at least once in every game. I've never seen anything quite like that, where you were absolutely certain that someone was going to score. I think that I did think about up front just going for Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez, because the way the partnership worked was so good. But I couldn't leave Ruud van Nistelrooy out because he was one of the... He wasn't as good as Henri, and the comparison was always between the two of them, but he was the next best in the world at the time. And I'm not quite sure you could ever have said that about Dwight York, although it is tempting because I think he got 26 goals and 24 assists in 98-99, and to contribute that to the greatest season in English football history is no small matter. 24 assists is the same as what David Beckham got in that season, which was the best season he ever had. And to manage that along with the goals is astonishing, really. But
I think you're right about that. I think certainly that's where the argument comes in. So Van Nistelrooy has this amazing period where he is the focal point of the entire team. And I understand that, like, you know, we're nitpicking here levels of greatness. But again, it's complete recency bias because we've just rewatched that Juve Manchester United game, and what York and Cole do as a partnership in that game is mesmeric, particularly in the first half when the team is 2-0 down. It's their interaction, it's their ability to find each other when they're running opposite directions, when one has their back to the other, that actually gets them back into the game. And in retrospect, I'm really thrilled that, like, Andy Cole gets the winner at the very end. I mean, obviously it's not the winner, but it's the winner on the night, because his performance deserved it, and he'd been so close to scoring in it. But, like, Cole that night was muscular. His first touch was good. His heading ability was good. He was abrasive. He was everything that you wanted him to be while he was still in the shadow of Eric Cantona. You felt like he wasn't going to fulfil that. And York's ability to unlock that, I think, makes him one of the great teammates. And if you're talking about we're taking players at the high heights and how good they were, I would argue that those two that night were unplayable, and over the course of that season, you know, they both hit their career marks. Like, there's an argument for them to be in this team on the basis of that season alone.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If you're playing 4-4-2, then you could definitely put them in. Cole in particular was astonishingly good that night. And he's another player who I think that people who didn't watch him every week don't realise what he was, because when he turned up at United, he was basically just a finisher. And usually when a club signs strikers like that, they either hit it off straight away or they don't work. There are very few strikers I've seen turn up at United, not be good at the beginning and eventually become really good. But with Cole, that wasn't the case. And he, over the course of his first two or three seasons, he transitioned from a kind of a one-touch finisher, like played through by Beardsley or a low cross, to an all-round brilliant centre forward who could do a little bit of everything. And that was why him and York worked. They could both come short. They both had a great first touch. They could both head. They could both volley. They could both finish. And it didn't matter who went where, because each could do the other one's job. And that was why I think that worked really well. But Van Nistelrooy was a level above both of them, I would say, at his best. Like, was able to take the ball away from goal and run past two or three defenders and score. And he would create his own goals also, whereas I would say the other two were quite dependent on service, whereas Van Nistelrooy, for some time, was at United, got so little service, but still managed to find goals.
All right, Cullum, Daniel, thanks a million for joining us this morning.
Cheers, see you again.
Cheers, Daniel. Who's got the better team there, Ger?
I think Everett has to be in that team. So I just lean a little bit towards Daniel. But like, look, they're both pretty good teams. Wayne Rooney not making the Man United team of the Premier League, I think, is going to incite some comment from Manchester United fans.
Well, John Giles didn't pick him in his best ever Manchester United 11 a couple of weeks ago. I will say it was best ever. The Premier League players that made Giles' 11 were Schmeichel, Irwin, Stam, Vidic, Scholes, Keane, and Ronaldo. No ever there either.
We didn't talk about Stam. Stam was sensational. I can't believe Alex Ferguson burned him out of the club. Or what? Or like, I don't know. What the hell was he thinking? It was insane.
Absolutely it was. There's more on that coming this week in our Classic Game Club 99. The second leg, Juventus against United in Turin. That famous night.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.